we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
Tonight we're looking at the classic 1970s TV series Blake 7, episode Project Avalon. Blake and the Liberator have come to an inhospitable frozen world to meet up with rebel leader Avalon. Unfortunately, Avalon has been taken prisoner by Space Commander Travis as part of an intricate plan, which he intends to kill Blake and his crew and liberate them from the Liberator, or liberate the Liberator from them. He's planning to take the Liberator from them. The plan doesn't go to plan. Blake and his friends survive. So, Ben, this is our third adventure with Space Commander Travis.
I'm sorry, it just derailed
just
so
derailed
badly
a little bit. Third adventure with Space Commander Travis here, really. So, how'd this one go?
I wanted it to go well. I expected it to go poorly. I was surprised.
At how poorly it went, or how
at
well
how
it went.
Much I liked it.
Oh, good, good. Well, that's good.
Yes, it was quite good. I was very pleased. I was surprised. I really, especially partway through this episode, I was just, oh God, this is really coming off as almost formulaic, and it was already beginning to depress me. And even with certain things that happened in the story, which we will discuss, I found that they were presented in such a way that it kind of gave the episode something, a bit of a fresh turn, and I ended up enjoying it enormously when it was over.
I kind of wonder if some of these episodes of Blake 7 were filmed in like one of the epic cold winters in Britain or something, because there seems to be an unusual number of cold planets that they have to go to and break out those thermal suits that they have.
No, it's the same thing that was with Doctor Who during the classic years. Whether it was an Earthbound episode or whether they were off gallivanting onto some other planet. Many times when they had to do location shots, it always came off as looking like they were freezing to death. And you'd see, you know, their breath as they were talking. And saying, wow, they must be filming that, and, you know, almost in the depth of winter. Who knows?
Anyway, so, you know, they do have freak weather. I think it was the episode of Doctor Who, and I will think of it very quickly, The Claws of Axis. That the weather changed so rapidly, and they had freak snowstorms when they were doing their location footage, that they had to add dialogue into the story that made it sound like the spaceship was causing freak weather changes.
Right.
So that
I remember
it was like go from a nice day to a snowy day in no time at all. So I don't know. I don't know whether that's it or whether they just Terry Nation likes cold planets, but I feel like they've.
I think this was a case of simply adapting the story to fit the filming situation.
Look, the outside scenes looked pretty fake, though. I mean, it looked a lot like foam. So,
well, that's not the first time we've seen a little
augmented reality.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so Avalon is this sort of frail little wisp of a girl, even though she is this formidable rebel leader, and she has come into the grasp of Space Commander Travis, who has set up a relatively intricate trap. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit because, you know, in the first adventure with Travis, we had the base on Kentro, and Blake had a fairly good plan for getting in, getting out, getting his communication equipment, hiding it. And it was Travis's thoroughness and attention to detail that, and of course, willingness to work other people around the clock looking for little tiny parts, that found the problem. And he had set up a relatively, I don't want to say foolproof because obviously it was fooled, but a relatively solid trap for Blake that ultimately failed because Travis has to lose. In Duel, which is our second one where we really see Travis and Blake, Travis has cornered Blake and the Liberator to the point where they're going to destroy them.
Yeah.
And if they hadn't come into the sphere of the planet of the women in extremely nipply pointy outfits, Blake would be dead along with the Liberator. So in this story, they make a point, two things. Travis makes a point of complaining to Servalan, who is in this, that he could have taken Blake out several times if they hadn't put a mandate on him to take the Liberator. And that's been causing him a problem, because in duel, he would have just had to destroy the Liberator.
Just destroy the ship, and that would have been it.
Problem
and
solved,
he had,
but they
and don't he had ample opportunity to do so.
And so Travis is now hand-tied in this situation. But he's still done... I mean, I think this is a perhaps a little elaborate, but it's a pretty good, solid plan.
It was a good trick, I've got to admit. I thought it was... It was a very elaborate trap, but as far as stories go, it made for a great episode.
And it was only, I can't remember what it was now, but there was just some freak coincidence that tipped them off that something was wrong. Oh, the fact that they took one of the guns. And the plan was great, except that Travis armed his men with guns
that had no kick to it.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw Avalon. What appeared to be Avalon get shot. We see Blake get shot, and it's just a bruise at best.
And from that, he deduces that they were supposed to get away, and if they were supposed to get away, that meant they were supposed to get something on the ship. They want the ship. Therefore, there's a traitor on board, and of course, it has to be not Avalon, of course, because she's above reproach, but the guy that led them to find Avalon.
Interesting how it all falls apart because the guards shot too well.
Yes. Yes, it is. That's exactly right. Travis was right that he needed to give them weapons that wouldn't kill.
But he didn't tell his guards that.
And didn't tell them not to hit. And that's really kind of derails the whole...
And given the fact that in past episodes, the guards have had really, really bad aim, telling them not to hit would not have been quite... So, I mean, it really wouldn't have been a stretch.
Maybe he did tell him not to hit. Maybe that's why they did hit him.
Oh, and that did it? And you know, I think you're onto something. Yeah, he probably told him, and their aim was so bad that they couldn't help but hit.
There's just one problem with that. Even Blake is going on about how incredibly good the Federation troopers are.
Remember? The same thing as only stormtroopers are so precise.
That is exactly right. That's exactly like in Star Wars where they point out, it's like, yeah, only stormtroopers could do this good of a job, except that
we
see them hit the broadside of a barn from that point forward.
Yeah.
Well, that's a failure of writing. They should have written it in some way that they didn't get in a firefight.
That's true. And herein lies a problem. I've had this with Star Wars. And I have it with any kind of television show. And this is one of the things about Blake Seven. It's kind of minor because it's not a major story element, but it is still there. And that is when you have this repressive government that has this terrifying, you know, almost like shock troopers that serve as your military / police that everybody should be terrified of because they're so dangerous and so threatening. And then, I mean, and then they can't really hit anything unless they're blindfolded. And maybe they might hit their target. It really takes away the threat. So the very fact that they were able to hit the, you know, Avalon and Blake, just while that was probably one of the biggest negatives. And I'm not saying that, you know, it ruined the episode, because it didn't, but it was a negative big enough for me to kind of set up and say, ooh, you know, given the history of this show already, I find that hard to believe.
So what do you think? Did the troops know? I mean, obviously the troops knew they had drawn new weapons, but did the troops know that the weapons were ineffectual for killing? Because they were dying like flies back there in the hallway when Jenna and...
I don't think they knew.
You know, we're killing them.
Right. I don't think they actually knew.
There was a great scene where I think the bodies had piled up at least three deep.
Yeah, they were three
deep. In
the
corridor as they went. And they, you know, they were fighting back. If I had a weapon that wasn't an effective killing weapon, I don't know that I'd be sticking my head around that corner any more than I had to.
No, I mean, unless you were working with mutoids who would have probably no qualms at all with sacrificing themselves for the cause. I mean, I don't see the regular stormtrooper, shock trooper, whatever they are, actually doing that.
Funny you should mention that, because I think that they said that the base was guarded by mutoids.
Well, we did see some.
Well, we saw quite a few at the beginning. Yeah. We saw a mutoid attack on the caves in the story, but when Shivala, I think, said he was, he could, you know, help him get into the base. He said
Shevner,
that's it. He was said it was guarded by mutoids, and it wasn't actually. It was guarded by regular troops. So,
well, kind of,
yeah.
So are the mutoids? I mean, I don't see any reason why the mutoids would be masquerading as regular guards. That's totally kind of contrary to what we've come to know of them already. So I don't know. It is puzzling.
I kind of thought the mutoid attack was pretty good at the beginning. They actually seemed competent.
They did seem competent, although I found that story element a little bit confusing, because here they were. They are attacking the Subterrans, and they are in service of the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And it... At the beginning, I mean, we find out later why they were doing it, and then it made sense. But in the beginning, it was just very, very strange. You know, the Subterrans are mining for these ice crystals on behalf of the Federation. So why would Travis have the mutoid, you know, kill like that? It didn't make any sense in the beginning, but then we find out, okay, you know, there's... Maybe there's some kind of little conspiracy going on here. I mean, we do see that there seems to be some kind of faction. So, okay, it does kind of make sense. But I spent most of my time not really appreciating how effective the mutoids were. I kept scratching my head and kept rewinding, saying, why are they doing this?
It's funny you should mention that, because we open on Travis kind of surrounding these people. And the first thing we see is Travis and some mutoids. And his prime mutoid there is played by Glynnis Barber, who I'll just point out to people watching Blake 7 that was Glynnis Barber. And if you don't know who Glynnis Barber is, I won't spoiler it, but we might see her again in Blake 7 later on in a different role. And they go in and they meet that guy. And I think that's what tipped me off. When they met the guy and Travis asked him, has Avalon contacted Blake, or has Blake contacted Avalon? And so to me, that put it as being, this is some sort of a resistance rebel thing.
Well, I kind of took that as to I just kind of felt like he was the sole spy who was there. Mm-hmm. I didn't get any sense that there was any larger dissenting groups. I never got that feeling.
Yeah, I didn't. Well, you know, and you mentioned that the Subterrans were mining the ice crystals, and so you took them to be Subterran miners. The thing is, they don't actually tell you that till after they're dead. It's not till after the shootout that we go up to the Liberator, and Avon is giving his readout on the planet, saying the planet has these ice crystals and it's mined by these people called the Subterrans, and then you know, Blake says, well, that's why Avalon's there then. She'll be organizing a resistance. And Avon's like, couldn't she just be after some juicy crystals? Mm-hmm. You know, kind of thing. So I took it the reverse way. I just assumed that ragtag bunch with guns was some sort of a rebel group. But that's because I assume everybody's a rebel group in Blake. Or a potential rebel group in Blake 7. But yeah, it's just, they really they didn't explain who they were. I just thought, if they're talking to Blake, there must be trouble. Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway. But there was some kind of a statement that the Subterrans were part of the Federation in some aspect. And then I just see this killing going on. I'm like, why? I mean, it was methodical and it was efficient, but it was puzzling.
It's fun for Travis. He likes just killing him.
Oh, yeah.
It's his thing. So the plot to take the Liberator is that they've captured Avalon. We're first presented with the possibility that she will be interrogated. And that
certainly looked that way.
And that, you know, it's made to us in no uncertain terms repeatedly that the Federation interrogation techniques will work. It doesn't matter who you are. If you put Blake in there, you put anybody in there, they will tell you what you want to know.
Well, they've certainly managed to break Blake in the past. We know that. Right.
So, you know, if you're captured, you're a serious liability to your movement. That's just a done deal. That's what makes it imperative that Blake try to rescue her. Otherwise, you know, dozens of resistance movements throughout the planets will be compromised by her.
Well, he knew that she had something. We didn't hear what it was, although I have a suspicion as to what it will be.
Hmm.
But apparently she knows something.
No, he specifically said she knows information about the resistance movements on throughout the star system.
I know, but it was not. It felt vague. Well, maybe I was looking for something a little more specific. But I felt like it was. It felt a little nebulous.
It's like she knows the mysterious location of Planet 2. Or no. Anyway, or the Class G.
Class G solar star?
Star that they have.
Thank you.
Anyway, so Blake has to go after him, but the plot really isn't that. The plan here is to replace her with an incredibly sophisticated android. I think they call it a robot, actually, but I'd have called that an android. And have her slip an incredibly lethal viral agent on board the Liberator and kill them all. Which, you know, a pretty decent approach if you can do it.
Yeah, it's a whole neutron bomb kind of mentality. But yeah, I thought it was enormously clever.
And it's an incredibly expensive weapon that has to be brought out by the Supreme Commander herself. There's an interesting little dynamic between her and Travis again. We'd seen it before, but now it's progressed. Obviously, the battle between Blake and Travis has been continuing between episodes because we talked about that point where Travis said he's had the Liberator at least twice and couldn't hit him. So there's obviously been other skirmishes.
And I would also imagine, I mean, the reason Travis was brought in is because the president and his council have come to recognize that Blake's exploits have turned him into something of a hero.
Right.
Now, I would imagine if those, just his adventures alone in the early part of the series, if those are gaining him some kind of, some kind of really positive reputation among the just regular citizens of the Federation,
yes.
I can only imagine what must be going on if people are hearing about this conflict that's going on, this hunt by Travis, and how it's failing at every turn. And knowing media as it is, I wouldn't be surprised if within the universe of Blake 7 that perhaps maybe the exploits were being told in such a way that it made it sound like that Blake was outwitting Travis at every turn. I mean, which is like maybe only 20% true. I mean, Blake had a lot of luck in that, in those previous two defeats.
He had a lot of luck in this one.
Yes, he did. A lot of dumb luck. But given that, And just assuming for a moment that the idea of some kind of, you know, the outlaw legendary status, you know, that might be attributed to Blake, which could make it, you know, turn him into some sort of an outlaw hero, if you will. And the way, I don't want to say social media, but just the way people talk and then start to revere this person, I could see how that would really start to undermine the Federation, its rules, and how that would just really start to stick in Servalin's craw.
Well, I think you noticed that she said to Travis that, you know, you should know that there's been a lot of criticism of the way you've been handling the Blake situation. And he said, well, you know, if I hadn't had to, I protest. If I hadn't had to try to capture the Liberator, I could have destroyed Blake on two occasions, and Servalon said, you know, I have made that case in your defense. So she's still on his side. But then she goes on to say there's this sort of political dialogue when she brings out the weapon for him. She basically says, you have my approval for this plan, unofficially, because someone in my position never gives approvals for plans. But officially, you have my presence and my attention. So she is playing political games.
Oh, she's being quite the diplomat.
And she's being quite candid with Travis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am supporting you, but I will cut you loose.
If this goes badly.
And I think that's a measure of respect for Travis.
Oh, without question. And he got that too. I mean, you could, because after she tells him that, you see he takes it in and he understands it for exactly what it was meant to be. And mm-hmm. he almost has this expression of gloat on his face in terms of how that's at least what I saw. He seemed to be just almost not maybe
swelling,
gloating a bit strong, but he was swelling with pride a bit. I mean, he was pleased without question that he got that kind of response from Servalon. I mean, he understood the position that she's in. At least he seemed to give that impression that he did. And seemed to greatly appreciate the fact that she was unofficially in his corner.
And you know, she came out. She brought him what he needed. We also get the indication that when he's building, or he has the people building the android, he tells them they have absolute priority for anything at all that they want or need. So, I mean, the hunt for Blake is still the number one Federation priority, or at least it's an alpha priority where you can get anything you need, and Travis still has the authority to get it for them. By the end of this episode, I don't think that that's the case anymore.
Mm-mm.
No.
No, the failure on Travis's part.
The humiliating failure
on
Travis's part.
The humiliating failure on Travis's part. I mean, this was a huge loss. And a humiliating one at that, given the way Blake was able to come back and rescue Avalon, the manner mm-hmm. in which he was able to kind of put Travis and the rest of the goon squad, kind of put them at a standstill so that Blake and Avalon and Liberator could, if, you know, affect their escape. I mean, it's the one thing that Blake always seems to, he kind of gloats on this, and that is how he takes, he said this once before. I think it was in the first time we see him. He says, I took a page out of your book.
Mm-hmm.
And while he may not have premeditated he may not have planned initially to go down this road, he went down and he was able to adapt to the situation given what had happened on the ship. He was able to kind of, okay, turn it around and throw it back in Travis's face in Servalon's presence.
Yeah.
I mean, so that really was, you know,
more than just her presence. She was directly in line of being destroyed by that virus.
Oh, totally. I mean, and Blake basically got to have his cake and eat it too.
Except for one thing. You know, it's one thing to say, you know, Travis says, "Kill me, Blake, or I'll never let you live in peace." And for Blake to say, "You don't matter enough to kill." Surely Servalon matters enough to kill.
Oh, she has to.
And yet, he didn't.
Well, I think...
Or did he? Because the... So what happens for our listeners who haven't heard it? Obviously, you know that, you know, even our synopsis and our discussions are spoilerific, so this is spoilerific. There is this vial, this freaky, glowingly round ping pong ball-like vial that contains this virus. And if you crack it, it will rip the flesh off your body in 23 seconds. And about 23 seconds later, completely cleared and biologically safe. So the intent is to get this robot in the shape of Avalon on board the Liberator and have her crack this vial, kill everyone, and the ship will be theirs in under 2 minutes. The problem is that Blake cottons on too quickly that the escape was too easy because of the gun. And because they were being nice to the Avalon robot, because she was in like a little robe at best, if you want to call it that,
mm-hmm.
They took it off of her and put Blake's heat suit on her when they were springing her from the jail, thinking on the ice planet, as they would, that she'd freeze to death in that little skimpy little number. And so she didn't have the tunic on, even though we did see her put the warm suit on over the top of
right.
the, and everything. So it wasn't, she didn't have the the vial with her. And so she had to dupe stupid Gan into going in. Could you find my tunic for me? I will be happy to go get that for you and get the deadly vial for you to destroy the place. Not that he knew that was going to happen, but, you know, it's Gan. So they just get lucky. I mean, they just literally get lucky because she was going to crush that vial in her hand. Aven reprograms this robot so that they can take it down to the planet. And I don't think Blake knew Servalon was there, but, you know, he reprograms it according to what he says, which could be totally a bluff. You know, for a certain word, a certain action, or a certain sound, the robot will crush the vial. Will break the vial, I think is what he says, actually. And then, you know, that gives them the time, because Servalon's not willing to risk it. That gives them the time to teleport the real Avalon out, leaving the vial and the robot Avalon standing there holding it. And Travis gently works his way towards it. And just as he gets close, the robot drops the vial. And Travis desperately dives and rescues it before it
hits
breaks.
The floor, cracks, yeah.
He really looked rattled when he hit the floor. You know, that was kind of a desperate moment for him. He sobbed.
What was at stake. I mean, he
right,
knew what this vial was going to do.
That's an unusual portrayal in a good one. I'm not saying it's a bad one, but it's an unusual portrayal for a hard-nosed villain type, because he actually shows just how damn close he was to dead.
I think what happens with that particular scene, we see this in a lot of literature and in a lot of movies where you have, you know, your villain archetype. And in many cases, they talk a good talk about what they're going to do. But at their core, the one thing they're terrified of in many stories is they're afraid of dying. And I think that scene alone was meant to show how Travis, I mean, Travis is very arrogant. He's very full of himself, and he's overly confident in his abilities. But I think that's also to maybe cover up a deep-seated fear of possibly dying when he really doesn't want to. And he was staring death straight in the face at that moment, because he knew what that vial would do. He knew what that virus was capable of doing. He saw it.
And of course, Servalon basically suspends him from active duty because of that failure and humiliation. And once again, Travis vows never to stop until he has killed Blake. So here's the question for you. We mentioned it before. Blake says he's not going to kill Travis because he doesn't matter. And, you know, we discussed whether or not Blake really was the kind who could kill him in cold blood. Blake comes down with this simply programmed robot. He says, this will respond to three things, a sound, a word, an action. Better be careful what you do. Beams out. One, did he actually have it programmed for those three things? Or is that a bluff? Two, when the robot drops the vial, was that in response to a sound, a movement, or a word? Or did Blake actually just program it to drop the vial a few seconds after he left?
Hmm. Okay. Answer to the first question, I don't think it was a bluff. It could very well have been, but given the seriousness of the situation, I would suspect that Blake would not want to take any chances. And to continue the poker metaphor, he was hedging his bets.
Well, you know, the sound could be the sound of Travis's gun. The action could be shooting someone. The word could be Blake.
No, I mean, he doesn't know. I mean, yeah. Case. I mean, it could have been any simple thing. I mean,
like,
and
you
the
kill
one,
me, then it crushes the robot. That could
right,
have been
I mean,
the action.
And you know, I don't think it was a bluff. And the one trump card that Blake has on this, especially, is that they don't know what it is. They don't know what the triggers are going to be. Not completely. As far as the robot dropping the vial, I believe that was in response to Travis making an approach.
Okay, so then, I mean, either way you go about it, if he had programmed it to drop the vial after he left, then that's basically cold-blooded murder.
I agree.
If he programmed it to drop the vial if someone approached the robot, that's basically cold-blooded murder.
I don't see that one. No, I don't agree on that. I believe no,
it's not defensive.
I believe I view it as it's not defensive in the case of, you know, like, okay, you know, we're fighting, I pull my gun out, I shoot you, and you know, because it was in the midst of a struggle.
Blake's long gone.
We don't know what kind of a time limit this whole thing has, and we're kind of led to believe. I mean, that now I saw this episode well over a week ago, so there's a lot of details that are a little fuzzy on me. But I was kind of under the impression that this little stalemate that Blake set up was not just so that they could beam out with Avalon, but so that they could actually escape in Liberator and get far enough away so that they needed everybody on the planet. They needed Servalon, Travis, the Mutoids, everybody to just like not move. They, you know, could be completely frozen in place while Blake got away. And then maybe after a certain period of time, I'm reading into this, I admit, the robot would just kind of disengage.
Yeah, I mean,
and then they could safely retrieve the vial.
But if the robot did in fact break the vial, let's say based on one of those triggers, let's just put it exactly what Blake said it was. He breaks it on this trigger, it's going to kill everyone in that command base, including all the prisoners that they have in the detention cells and any of their slave grades or whatnot. So I mean,
it's harsh.
It's pretty harsh move.
But I wouldn't call it cold-blooded. Because he's giving them an out.
But Blake did cold-bloodedly kill those pirates in Mission to Destiny by planting charges on their ship. So, I mean, he's capable of it. He's absolutely capable of killing it.
I think he avoids it when possible.
And the other thing that was kind of questionable is that I think, I'd have to go back and watch it, I don't remember whether he said the robot will crush the vial or the robot will break the vial.
I don't recall, but it was one of the two.
The reason I ask is that that's a much more aggressive action than just letting it fall out of your fingers. And there's the possibility that that was just the robot, I wouldn't say malfunctioning, but, you know, just sort of accidentally dropping that out of its hand. I don't know. It's very ambiguous with what happened with that vial. That is
a strange moment. As far as the rest, I mean, this is very morally ambiguous. And I don't think that there's a right answer or a wrong answer. It's just a simple case of this is what it is. But my personal take on it, and I wish I could come up with a good example, but unfortunately I can't. But I just feel that the way Blake presented it on the surface, in terms of this is the situation, he's giving them a chance to survive. He says, you know, you play, you know, you do it, do these things, you're dead. Don't do these things, you live. And then he manages to effect his escape. I don't view that as necessarily cold-blooded. Mm-hmm. In the case of he was going to do it anyway, well, that is, no question. As far as, is Blake capable of cold-blooded murder? Well, that bid with the pirates, yeah, that was
pretty unnecessary.
That was pretty, pretty serious.
But he can't take out the supreme commander of, I mean, think of the legend of Blake, the rallying cry of the rebels and the malcontents out there. If Blake managed to kill the supreme commander,
did he even know?
Well, he didn't know, but when he got there, he certainly knew because he called her supreme commander.
Like I said, it's been over a week, I don't remember.
Blake, Travis said, "You'll never get out of here. You're bluffing, Blake." And he says, "No, I'm not. I'm bluffing because you're bluffing because you died too." And he said, "I'd have the pleasure of taking you with me, Travis, and the supreme commander." And that's true.
Held
the hand at so.
So maybe, I don't know.
Even if he didn't crush it with a vial, the Liberator should have turned its blasters on that thing from orbit at that moment and just crushed that base. It's like, if there's ever an opportunity, would he have done it if it was the president of the Federation? You know, at what point does this rebel freedom fighter strike a blow for liberty and not take out the the top dog in the military.
At what level does the person that you're killing, does it matter? I mean, as you said, in the case of Travis, it didn't matter. Well, I guess it didn't matter with Servalen either, although I dare say he will probably regret that as the series progresses.
That seems like the flaw that they mentioned with the Master in the first series in Doctor Who with Jon Pertwee, that he's like, he's back all the time, and it's never the victory that we need, and that's what's happening here. You've got to keep them alive. You've got to keep Travis alive. You've got to keep Servalen alive.
You need your foil. You need your villains alive. Yeah, and you can't get rid of them, because if you do, then you just trot out another adversary. But that kind of weakens the overall story. And there, that's the discussion that we had a few weeks back, or a few episodes back, on Blake 7. And that is, it's great that you have these villains that can now be the face of your enemy. I mean, as I've said before, in the very first couple of episodes, we had the Federation, the evil government. And that was interesting and maybe a bit more realistic, but story-wise, it's boring. So you have to have a face. You have to have Servalen. You have to have Travis. But how many times can you have them fail and not pay the ultimate price for that failure?
That's right.
And have it and still manage to keep your viewer interested. Ooh, what's going to happen next time? I mean, what kind of dastardly revenge is Travis going to go after? And how is Blake going to thwart him? I mean, you know, you can only go to that well so many times.
It does kind of look like Travis is going to pay a price for this one.
Well, that's true. There's consequences.
Will it be a sufficiently high price for this situation?
Or will Travis? No, we do know. And here's just a weird thought. And again, it's been so long since I've seen this series that there's a lot of details I don't recall. But we know that when Travis was first brought on board, I mean, he wanted mutoids. He wanted the fastest ships, all so that he could hunt down Blake and Liberator. Is it possible that now he has been stripped and in essence suspended, that now he's going to go rogue and feel that, you know, okay, now I can go after Blake my way.
Maybe.
And maybe he'll feel that his hands are freed to do what he feels is necessary.
So we actually get to see an evolution of his character.
Possibly. That's what I'm wondering.
Well, I guess we'll
find out. Only find out as episodes go on. So, but yes, that was one thing that I did like, in that the episode, this is the story, at least in terms of Travis and his working relationship with Servalen and the adversary relationship with Blake, it's not totally static. I mean, it just didn't reset. There was definitely an alteration in the character development, and that was something I liked enormously. How it pans out in the future, I've got to wait and see.
Obviously, Travis is a buffer against the failure reflecting on Servalen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She can always go to the president and say, he's the one who messed up, not me.
You can only do that so many times, though.
True.
I mean, you keep hiring underlings that do a bad job, then eventually, I mean, it reflects upon you. But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, crap, you know, rolls uphill in this case. And it would eventually stop on Servalen's desk.
So there's a scene in this that I absolutely love, and it is so perfectly placed character moment, and that is when Servalen arrives in her flowing regal...
Or her white fur.
White fur robe, yeah. And comes into the room, and she's attended by two mutoid guards, and she takes her cloak off, and I only use that in the most... general of terms, it's not so much taking it off as she just sort of tosses it off her shoulders and lets it fall on the floor.
I know, it's so femme fatale.
It's, and you know, a mutoid dutifully bends over and picks it up, and I don't know, they straighten it or put it on or whatever they do with it at that point. We never really see it again. But it is so callously disregarding of the people that's around her, the little people. So, if those had been human guards, that gesture would absolutely be, I am so far above you that, you know, you're just here to pick up after me.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that in, you know, probably some Caligula or some other show of that nature. But with mutoids,
well,
it's different.
It falls on deaf ears as far as they're concerned. I mean, they're incapable of appreciating, be it positively or negatively, the significance of this simple act.
So there's no point in conveying your contempt.
No, there's no point in it except that it's just who she is. I don't think it's a case of she's doing it to humiliate or to keep other people under her thumb. She's doing it because she's Servalan. It's just who she is.
Probably. I'll take that as a probably. I would have liked to have seen it played out both ways just to see if Terry Nation had something different in mind. I just couldn't tell at that moment. It's like, is that contempt there because they're just nothing but mutoids, or would she have that contempt for anyone?
I kind of get it. Yeah, I feel that contempt is for, you know, everybody's beneath her. Everybody. And I wouldn't be surprised if she even views the president as beneath her. But because he's the president, she has to respect his office, although she may think the person is totally beneath him. It's just who she is. I mean, she's a total user. Nobody, you know, everybody else is just expendable, not worth it, whatever. It's just the kind of person she is.
Hmm.
And that, I think that's what makes her, that's why she's so fun to watch in the show. Because there's, I don't know if I call it depth, but there's a lot of places that you can take that character.
So would you say that she's chewing the scenes?
Oh,
or
totally.
Is it just that she's commanding them?
Well,
you know, there's a difference between hideously over the top.
Oh, it's not over the top.
It's not over the top.
No.
She actually is doing a magnificent job of conveying power.
If it were over the top, it would come off as cornball.
With femininity.
Right. And instead, what she delivers is something that is totally believable. She's giving us something about this character. And I sit back, I watch it, and I say, yeah, that's the kind of person that character is. To me, that is commanding the scene. I thought she was magnificent.
Let's see. Blake was okay in this episode. Aven didn't have a whole heck of a lot to do.
Not a lot on this one, no.
But he did come back for him. They had to take the Liberator out of orbit at a critical moment to preserve their life, but then he came back for Blake, so he didn't run off, although Gan and Callie were on board the ship with him and probably would have put up a fight on that one, particularly Gan. I think he's more concerned that Callie would have put up a fight.
Mm. Yeah.
And Villa was useful, picking locks throughout the episode. But it really was kind of more about Travis and
it was
and
about
Servalan.
Travis and Servalan.
This was
their
cog
story
in this one, kind of. Yeah. Well, that's all I have. Oh, I know there is one other thing I have. The caves, the ice caves.
Mm.
You recognize them?
They did look.
I mean, there's only one. As far as I know, there's only one set of caves. No, that's not true. I'm sure there's caves in Cheddar as well. That's Wookiee Hole. That is where Revenge of the Cybermen was shot.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, far out.
It's a famous. It's a famous cave formation somewhere in Britain.
I knew I'd seen it in a Doctor Who episode. I at one point I thought it might have been in part of the Pirate Planet, but I wasn't sure.
That's right. They were somewhere cold and underground in the Pirate Planet. I don't know where that was shot, but definitely the underwater, you know, the little lakes and the streams and stuff in Wookiee Hole. That was definitely Wookiee Hole.
I was thinking Pirate Planet because it looked like it at parts. So, but then knowing how Doctor Who likes to revisit places and just give them new names, I wouldn't be surprised if they use the same place more than once.
Oh yeah, that
wouldn't. And it would only make sense for the BBC to use it again in Blake 7.
Especially if the owners were letting them.
Oh, of course.
Like, oh yeah, well, come on back.
Yeah, just keep
writing that check.
The check has one T in it.
All right. Well, in that case, when we come back for the next episode of Blake 7, I don't know what it is.
Oh,
so it'll
dear.
Be a surprise
to us all,
to everyone.
Even when we talk about it, we
That's
won't
right.
even know
we
what
won't
we're discussing.
We won't even watched it yet. We will
no.
just talk about
we're,
the episode.
We're just, yeah, we're going to talk about an episode we've never seen.
I swear someday we should set up so that we watch the episode and talk about it as we watch it.
Oh, okay. How MST3K.
Yeah, we're not there to make fun of it. We're there to give it a serious science fiction going over.
I'm sure we could, but I know that if it's one of the weaker episodes, we're gonna end up lampooning it to no end.
Yeah.
Which could be highly entertaining.
That's true. Maybe if Travis comes back, we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Ben, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
And listeners, we hope you will join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes, or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for Fusion Patrol. Or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.